to last time, we got kind of the rosy picture, right? We got the pre-fall kind of description. We're talking about Christians and this physical world, the environment, the earth, the planet. And so there's handouts up here if you want. But we talked about some key aspects, like what was our purpose originally in terms of living on the earth. Anybody remember any kind of key points? Like, what did God tell us to do, or what was kind of our guidance for those key commands? Yeah, fill the earth and subdue it. Be fruitful and multiply. And we get that from where? Yeah, bonus point. Right? Fill the earth and subdue it. And, particularly in the garden, God gave Adam the command to work and keep, or cultivate and keep. Okay? Yeah. And so, this is all before sin, before the fall. And so, we're preparing to kind of get ready to talk about what happens when we get to sin. So, we're kind of at the last part on page 3. Okay, I thought we'd maybe start there and have a little discussion. So, someone want to read Genesis 2, 19 through 20, there at the bottom of page 3.
Out of the ground, the Lord God formed every beast of the field, and every bird of the sky, and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. And whatever the man called a living creature, that was its name. The man gave names to all the cattle, and to the birds of the sky, and to every beast of the field. But for Adam there was not found a helper suitable for him.
Yeah. So this is even pre-Eve, right? So any sense of the kind of that question there, like what was it, with what ease was Adam able to work with the animals to get a sense of what's going on there?
I kind of wonder if he had to make a ledger, all the animals that were good to remember.
Like, okay, horse.
But,
draw a little cartoon.
Than the rest of us, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, he easily came up with a name for all of them.
So do you assume that all of those things were tame?
That's kind of a question. What do you guys think? Were they...
Was he able to touch them all and,
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. What would your guess... Let's just guess. Because does it say clearly, got any clues, hints? It says, brought them to the man. We don't really see method. What do you guys think? Were they tame? Do you think they were kind of dragged? The rope, or caught in a cage, or
I think they were tame. If he brought them to him, they would have to come willingly, because they would anyway, because God would bring them.
Yeah.
There's no death yet.
Yeah.
There was no killing.
Yeah.
So that drives a lot of the wildness.
The predator prey.
Yeah. So the killer whale was just a whale.
Yeah. Right. The killer bee.
Just a hornet.
Yeah. So, I mean, how does that affect, like, the difference between where we're at now? When we think about pre-sin, how is that relationship? What does that tell us about how we should relate to the animal kingdom, or what the ideal would be? I'm getting later to more killing and the eating of meat. I know that question's going to come up at some point. So we're not quite there yet, but just pre-fall, right, before sin, what's that describe in terms of Adam's relationship with plants, animals, the earth?
The way he describes it, it just looks like there's like this parade of animals that just kind of walks up in a line and waits their turn and gets their name. Just this picture of like he's ruling without difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
Like they could pick fruit that just grew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I was just going to say that everything was a joy. So
yeah.
At least.
Yeah. And so kind of the segue is then, if we look at this and say, we read this far into Genesis and say, this is kind of the way God created things. This is our ideal. So the kind of question is, well, what's the danger just kind of looking at that clay today? What would be wrong with saying, this is the way God wants it to be, so that's the aim we should have?
Well, if you walk up to a tiger right now, it's not going to be very friendly.
Excellent point. Excellent point. There's kind of a different relationship now, isn't there?
And on the flip side of that is that most things that are not what you think of as your tame pet at home, everything runs from you.
Yeah.
So it's not like it, you know, yeah, we're scared of the wild things, but everything else runs away from you.
Mm-hmm. They're scared of you.
That's what my point is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Grasshopper doesn't just sit there and let you catch it.
Right.
Deer will run.
Everything runs from you. So.
Yeah, yeah. I found that just thinking through the relationship between man and animals or creatures and the relationship between God and man through this set of passages through Genesis, it's going to be interesting to kind of think about how there's relate, how they act towards one another, right? So at this time, you know, God was in the garden, and did Adam run from him when he saw him? No, he walked with him. Mm-hmm. Not in fear, right? Mm-hmm. Trusted him, loved him. Okay, well, all right, now we got to get to Genesis 3, right? So we have Adam and Eve sin, and they take the fruit of the tree, and then someone would read there, Genesis 3, 17 and 18.
To Adam, he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife, and you have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat from it. Cursed is the ground because of you, and toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. But thorns and thistles it shall grow for you, and you will eat the plants of the field.
Okay, so we're kind of going to take this in parts. So we have this original part, right? We're not yet addressing the animal kingdom. Right? So what changed here? Or what happened because of their sin?
From a blessing to a curse.
Yeah. So what was specifically cursed here?
The ground.
The ground. Cursed is the ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'd be like thorns and thistles. Mm-hmm. I wish you'd left that part out.
I know. I know.
There are other parts I wish you left out too.
Yeah. So we see that the blessing that God gave and the way that the earth would produce food and fruit, right, that all changed to a curse, right? And so we see that now, instead of it coming up easily, what's the difference? There's a couple differences. What were they?
Hard work.
Hard work. It's going to take a lot more work. And you mentioned the last, right? It's not, right, it's not just going to produce fruit now. Right, you're gonna have a lot of thorns, thistles, and so I think, you know, there's kind of a question there. Right? Does that mean it's lost all its traces of goodness? What would you say? I mean, is it just totally cursed?
The good's still there, but you have to work for it. And also, to me, there's an element of discouragement in there when you cultivate the ground and you get good, but you also get thorns and weeds and thistles. And discouraging in the battle,
right,
the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you, I think one thing that I think of often, and if you guys, if anybody gardens or, you know, plants their own food, sometimes you recognize that not all produce is the same, right? Mm-hmm. So you wonder if before, if there was this great quality of food, and kind of sin has kind of corrupted, where sometimes you have things that's, you have two of the same strawberries, or two,
yeah,
right, and one is just, you're like, that must be what a real strawberry. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It's fun to imagine what all that's like if it's not sin cursed. And we think it's good. We think something's really good, and we have no clue. Mm-hmm. It's not even a fathom of the goodness that it was before.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of cool to think about it. For me, I think about that stuff a lot. You know, somebody post a gorgeous picture of a sunset or whatever. If we only knew. I mean, that's just a sin cursed sunset.
Right. Right.
Now, going down to Brazil, I had bananas off the tree. My goodness. I mean, it just tastes like unflavored starch. Just ruined bananas for me forever, really. I haven't recovered since.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting, this doesn't really relate, but like the word for ground or dust or earth is like Adama, like it's from Adam. So like from the earth, Adam came from the earth. So there's a kind of like this connection linguistically. So I thought, well, that's kind of interesting, you know, in the fact that, you know, after the curse, right, now what happens to man? He returns to the earth, right? Came out of the earth. Blessing, right? Created, cursed. Now he's going to go back into the earth. So we're going to skip ahead a little bit to Genesis here, and then we'll talk about kind of the animal kingdom. So this is an interesting passage, I think. So let's read Genesis 9, 1, 2, 3. Someone read that.
And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The fear of you and the terror of you will be on every beast of the earth and on every bird of the sky. Everything that creeps on the ground and all the fish of the sea, into your hand they are given. Every moving thing that is alive shall be food for you. I'll give all to you as I gave the green plant."
Awesome. So a couple of things there. We're thinking about this earlier in some of our discussion. Anything you observe that kind of stands out to you in that passage that is significant?
Sounds like the relationship between man and animals has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Before, evidently, the animals weren't afraid of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's been changing.
Yeah, so before we had God, creates man, and man is to rule over the animals. But in a sense, right, what kind of how would you describe their relationship pre-fall? God with man with the animals?
Harmonious.
Yeah, peaceful, harmonious. Right, we have sin. Oh, no, my teacher. So then, right, we have God and how he relates to man and animals. Right,
and how does that change things?
Well, now the animals have a fear.
Yeah. They kind of run away. What is it? Does it say they run away? It just says the fear of you and the terror of you. This reminded me of something early in Genesis after the sin, right? What do we read about Adam and Eve, right? After sin, what did they do?
They hid.
They ran away and hid. So you imagine the way, you know, you come upon some animal, wild animal, as soon as it sees you, right, it takes off, it's scared, right? And so it made me think, is that the way they felt? Like, I'm afraid for life at this point.
And it is interesting. I mean, humans are far more dangerous to even great white sharks than great white sharks are to humans. I mean, if we want to go and just harvest 1,000 great white sharks, we put our mind and energy to doing it, we could. So you look at the shark attacks and stuff like that. Even the apex predator of the ocean should be terrified of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's new here? What have we not seen so far in the Genesis accounts that we see here?
That we are eating
food. Yeah. So he says we see explicitly here: every moving thing that's alive shall be food for you. I give all to you as I gave the green plant. Okay, here's a thought question. So between this verse, or this account in Genesis, where he's talking with Noah and his sons, back to Adam and Eve post, right? They sinned, they fell, the relationship was destroyed. What do you guys think about the eating, the killing of animals, right? So is there any scriptural, what does God want during that time? So I'm kind of asking, is this a new thing? Is he just proclaiming something that he started in the past? What do you think?
I think it's a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
I
do you think is going on here? Because there's not an explicit, or is there an explicit command that, you know, that they were told that they were to eat all the plants or the fruit, right, earlier. What about between that time? Exercise or study here. What do you think?
God killed animals, put skins on them when they sinned.
Okay, let's go to that. Where's that? It's in Genesis. Yep, it's a good answer right now. Yeah, excellent. So, you want to read that passage, that verse or so?
It's 321.
The Lord God made for Adam and his wife garments of skins and clothed them, right? So, we're presuming that he had to, that involved killing the animals, right? So, we have Genesis. And then there's another kind of hint or clue, maybe, not far away from there. Can you think of anything else?
Sacrifice fat portions.
Sacrifice of the fat portions, right? Which also likely involved killing the... So where's that?
And it was the firstling. It's not like just as something that got... It's 4-4.
Mm-hmm.
It's the firstlings of the flock. It's not just something that got torn by beasts or something.
Mm-hmm.
Firstborn, first... The fat portions, right?
And, right, which of the... Was he the one that had his sacrifice was looked down upon?
No.
Right? So we see there Genesis 4:4, and Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering. Okay? So what would that lead us to maybe include? You think they were sacrificing them and then just leaving the... Leaving the meat all on the ground?
Wouldn't that be the point of herding sheep in the first place?
You would think so. You would, I don't know, just have a bunch of pets.
More food.
Well, God had shown them that that's how to be clothed.
Mm-hmm.
The
so they have clothing.
So wool, I mean, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So a lot of times there's questions like that that we maybe can't just look to and say, oh, like it does in the Noah account. God said this, but we can kind of figure that out working through what's happening in the accounts. What is God blessing? What are they doing? What are they commanded to do?
Yeah, I think it's interesting in this passage is everything is given to you to eat. There were really no restrictions at all. He wasn't imposing a kosher diet.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen until Exodus and Leviticus.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we're at the same spot where we can really eat anything we want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe this is talking about the scope.
anything that moves, I think. Living thing, moving thing.
Even in the garden, there was something that was forbidden. But in Genesis 9, it's like, you can eat it.
Yeah. Which sometimes we're given freedom to eat things that maybe we don't. I don't know if I'll eat that bug or that.
I'm thankful for our forefathers who tried everything before we did it. You know what I'm saying? Had some wisdom. Can figure out, like yogurt. I mean, there was a brave soul who had yogurt for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder, like, poisonous berries and stuff like that. I wonder how that changed. A lot of questions.
What about peanuts?
Ooh, that's a great question. David Wernley, what do you think about...
We're made of meat.
Ooh.
What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right?
She answered.
What'd you say?
We're image bearers.
Image bearers, yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. So what if someone doesn't view a difference between?
A
yeah.
I just noticed something in verse 3:19 I'd never seen before. It says, by the sweat of your face you shall eat bread. Well, who taught Eve to cook, I wonder? I mean, you had to bake bread, right? You always get bread
mm-hmm.
off the tree.
Yeah.
So who made the oven and who taught her to cook?
Mm-hmm. And how to make flour.
Well, I think bread was, instead of using the term food, we use the term bread.
So it doesn't mean
a loaf of
whole wheat.
Rainbow.
There is something called the bread fruit.
That's true.
Okay.
But bread and food were interchangeable.
Okay. How about that?
Okay. It's like Coke doesn't mean Coke in the South. It means all forms of soda.
Somebody did have to bake the first loaf of bread.
That's
somebody
true.
Figured it out.
I mean, like, eventually.
And it was probably a human.
It was probably
a human.
Good chance.
There you go. Okay, I'm good.
That's good. Yeah. Okay. And what do we decide on humans? We can eat those? No. Okay.
Well, because in 9, you're not allowed to kill humans. Like, in the same place where he says you can eat everything, he says you can't kill humans.
Mm-hmm. Just to clarify.
Just to make sure everyone's... He's, like, from the first pre-flood, like, okay, I know these guys are going to make this really clear to everybody. Yeah, so we kind of see that in a lot of ways... there was kind of this mirrored relationship where this peaceful and harmonious relationship when sin kind of corrupted man and made him fear and run from and kind of have that peaceful relationship destroyed, the same kind of thing happened with animals. But more so here, where now man is killing and eating, right? So that's that. We're kind of in this stage right now. Let's read Genesis 11, see what this would add to it. So someone read 11, 7 through 9. She's reading it right now.
I'll read it.
Okay.
Come, let us go down and confuse their language so that they will not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. Therefore, the name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole earth. And from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth.
Awesome. Good emphasis.
Yes.
So there's not really a mention of plants and animals here, so why is this? What does this relate to our discussion about the environment or man's purpose on earth? What's key? Or the question in your handout, why did God scatter all the people?
Wanted them to be fruitful and multiply, and they were all staying in the same city and not diversifying.
Yeah, and potentially they might be able to be fruitful and multiply and just stack up the building, right, the tower higher and higher.
Yeah.
But he also wanted them to be fruitful, multiply, and
fill the
earth, right? Yeah. And so how does that maybe contrast with sometimes a view of the environment or how we should care for the environment? How does that shape the way we view caring for and protecting the environment if we're to fill the earth?
I think like last week when Becky was saying, you know, if everything just grew naturally and we didn't, you know, cultivate the ground, then there wouldn't be enough to sustain the population of the earth. So if we didn't spread us out to do these things and provide ourselves and work the ground, then there wouldn't be provisions for everybody. So
yeah,
that also applies in the face of our modern idea that part of a way to save the environment is to control the Earth's population.
Right. And what's kind of behind that reasoning, right? More people does what to the environment?
I mean, destroys it. Overpopulated.
Yeah, that we're overpopulated. Oftentimes that they believe that they would cite things like we're tearing down the forests, right, to use that lumber, or we're destroying this natural land to provide for people, right? And so in that view, the earth is preserved and kept without, right? Humans are like the blight on the planet. Whereas in this view, God wants us to actually inhabit the land and kind of subdue it. Doesn't mean that we destroy it, turn it into a parking lot, but that we're inhabiting it, spreading over the whole earth. Any thoughts there? Any questions before we move on?
I guess I always thought that the reason he did that was because they, you know, they were worshiping in the wrong way, and it was almost like a punishment. I always thought that was kind of a punishment, not oh, hey, you know, spread out. I guess I
did. Yeah. God's using social distancing to spread us.
Sermon title.
God's social distancing.
Works every time.
But it's true that, I mean, I studied this stuff. I had a class that was called Political Geography, and it's just so raw with all this. But there's the idea that when humans go to a place, they ruin it.
Yeah.
And that the best places are like these pristine, untouched places where humans have not gone. And if humans move in there, it's ruined. And that really is the ethos of that whole movement,
mm-hmm.
is we are a blight. And part of the reason why there's a political motivation for congregating in cities,
mm-hmm.
is basically to keep us out of other places. Literally. I mean, like, leave the animals alone, don't hunt them, don't whatever. Like, they should completely retake these places. Like, you look at the zone between North and South Korea that's unoccupied completely now.
Mm-hmm.
That's returned to just this wild natural state. And those people celebrate that, and they're like, how can we turn more places into this wild natural state? And I'm like, it's that way because otherwise people will kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not because this is it's not a good thing.
Right.
It's a bad thing that that's a place where people cannot go.
Hmm.
You know, and according to scripture, that would be a bad thing. But it's exactly turned around,
mm-hmm.
according to the environmentalists.
Yeah.
Don't you believe that people tend to destroy what they enjoy? I mean, like, just take the Flint Hills, for example. People just love the serenity and the isolation, and so they move out there, and then they start having, you know, people come in and
mm-hmm.
big groups, and next
mm-hmm.
thing you know,
they're
doing more serenity and quiet.
Yeah. Yeah. Stonehenge, right?
Yeah,
on
cattle. Yeah, Stonehenge.
For very odd reasons.
Yeah.
Well, even like we live right next to the Tallgrass Prairie Reserve,
mm-hmm.
whatever. And it's interesting because they take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they go out there and they spray
mm-hmm.
for weeds and they
mm-hmm.
do all sorts of stuff. So it's not, and I mean, they have it's a cool thing, whatever. But it is interesting that they're not just leaving it to let the
mm-hmm.
Kansas
mm-hmm.
Ecosystem do what it does. They're
yeah.
taking care of it, and they're, I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
pretty, but it is interesting to see that, because their argument can be, oh well, we should just leave everything alone, but then they have this acres and acres of land. They're not just leaving it alone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they're still using chemicals out there,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Spray
the rush. I'm not going to complain about them killing Johnson grass.
Yeah. So, like Dave, you've often talked about how there's this reversal, right, where sometimes we subjugate, instead of God being over man, we place man over God, and that alters the total way in which we view the world. And so it kind of reminds you of that reversal, whereas sometimes there's a reversal where Earth is seen as, you know, kind of the Mother Earth type thing. And man is this little one of a billion species that is beneath, you know, where the earth is kind of the image bearer in their
right.
mind, right?
Yeah.
And
right.
so the goal is to preserve the earth, which is supreme, and man is just one of these other
yeah.
creeping, crawling things.
Which, if you think about it, is so insidious that all the creation is the image of the divine, and we are the ones who are the evil force.
Hmm.
Like, that is literally the
opposite,
of God making us as image bearers and creation a reflection.
Yeah. And it attributes, in much the same way, it attributes all of the evil to the image bearer, right? And then indirectly back to
worshiping creation rather than the creator,
yeah.
basically.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think, too, there's a sense where man is a steward of the earth in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
If we go back to the early 80s, the environmental movement was focused on save the trees, right? You try
mm-hmm.
to save all trees. And then they discovered after several catastrophic forest fires that to do that was detrimental to the forest. And so
mm-hmm.
now, you know, the lumber industry is a real asset to the forest because they're able to build, you know, harvest trees and build fire breaks and fire barriers so that, you know, these wildfires are now contained because of lumber roads.
Well, because they harvest by thinning rather
mm-hmm.
than just, you know,
clear cutting,
right.
Clear
okay.
cutting. And so now you have more trees now than you did 100 years ago.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So there's
mm-hmm.
a way, naked capitalism
mm-hmm.
is not something I think Christians should be for, but there is a sense where the earth is for our good. Mm-hmm. And we are good for the
and
earth.
And we are for its
good. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, because does, in a sense, although our relationship has changed, right, it's with toil, by the sweat of your brow, it hasn't necessarily changed our role to cultivate and to keep the earth, right? To rule it, to bring it under subjection. But it's with much more effort. And not only because the earth is cursed, right? We are cursed image bearers. And we're corrupted by sin. And so we see that we have to somewhat be careful that we don't ignore the truths of the depravity of man and the way that we do abuse the earth, right? And so it's not necessarily that because this is a wrong view, then, okay, we're just awesome. Everything we do is great. But we're trying to look for what our ideal purpose is. And so there's just a note there. You know, we started out tranquility, you know, and even in that time that we had the authority to subdue the entire planet, bring it under control. But when sin came, right, it corrupted all that. All right, the animal world, the plant life. So we're still called to fulfill that same mandate, but it will come through force, through sweat, through effort, through toil. And good to remember that it's only going to really be reconciled and when Jesus redeems the planet. Okay, in Romans 8 talks about all of creation is groaning for that return. And so we're kind of right now, when we think about Christian ethics, it's how do we live in such a way to glorify God right now in this current condition, okay? What's a good way to view the land and the animals? Okay. Comments, thoughts before we continue. Almost.
Yeah, I think the seeing humans as good for the earth is one of the foundational parts of Christian environmentalism.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of seeing humans as a blight on the earth.
Yeah.
And so kind of getting that straight and seeing humans as made in the image of God ruling on behalf. I mean, it's...
And also avoiding kind of the initial, we talked about two different extreme views, is also not viewing the world as a disposable planet. That, hey, it's just for us, we can do whatever we want, you know, trash it, burn it.
That's what I was going to say, we can be a blight, though, if we aren't taking
sure.
care of it. Mm-hmm. Throwing trash out our car window and...
And so kind of one thing we can also talk about as we kind of turn to the next is that we've been talking mostly about kind of this vertical, but what about how do we view or how do we shape our view of the environment when we talk about humans to humans, right? Loving your neighbor, all right? Let's look at the golden rule, right? Matthew 7:12, therefore, however you want people to treat you, so treat them, for this is the law and the prophets. Matthew 22:39. The second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So, right, what are some just basic principles there? How does that impact the way in which you handle the environment or the crops or your animals? Or how does considering your neighbor, loving your neighbor? So the question is, we're talking about now, not just how does man relate to the animals and the plants, but relating to one another, right? We're called to love one another. So how does that commandment to love one another affect the way we view the environment? What choices should we make or not make when we decide on how to best subdue the earth, in a sense?
Don't go to war.
Don't pollute it?
Don't go to war to fight over stupid stuff like oil or
don't steal it.
Don't steal it.
If you don't leave anything for the next generation, that's basically stealing.
Oh yeah.
You've stolen from the next generation.
Yeah.
So you have to, you know, leave something.
Sustain.
God commands us to leave something for our kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to, that would be one way of loving your neighbor. It's not stealing from the future neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think one thing that comes to my mind is just drinking water. I mean, if you're pumping sewage into a river,
mm-hmm.
everybody downstream is hurt by that action.
Mm-hmm.
And if you pump sewage into a river that goes into a lake, and you poison, you know, the lake, then future generations are impacted by
mm-hmm.
a really selfish action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think also about the changes that people will make to energy production, and how first world developed countries have options that undeveloped countries don't have. And so we might be able to change our sources of energy without starving people, whereas other countries may not have that option. They don't have the technology developed so that if they, it's either, you know, produce carbon and live, or we're going to starve.
Yeah.
So there's kind of those decisions that are unique to different parts of the world. One more local example I was thinking of is, and I don't know a lot about this, so I'm kind of treading lightly, like a lot of topics, but my father-in-law, brother-in-law farm, and they were talking about how, you guys know that there's crops that are designed, right, so that they resist a certain Roundup Ready or GMO, right? But there's like different competing brands, right? So if I live here and I've got this brand, and my neighbor lives here and they've got this brand, right? It's possible that I can spray and all mine are good, and if that drifts over here, what happens?
Kills it.
Kills everything. Right?
Bad news bears.
Really bad.
Because they have different.
Because they're designed, so the pesticide is like the seed that's planted is a designed seed to resist this thing that kills everything else.
Gotcha.
And if I planted a different seed that's resistant to mine, when theirs floats over it, it just toasts it or kills it.
Does that happen often?
Yes.
It's a pretty big...
So there's a big lawsuit.
It's
legally
Supreme
Court taking this up.
I know a vineyard, and their neighbors sprayed their plants, whatever they had, and it killed about half their vines. And it was something that, I mean, you could take legal action against
yeah.
it for your neighbor doing that, because there's all sorts of legally stuff, what you can and can't do when you're spraying.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big deal.
And as far as I understand, there's a lot of times where no one is held, no one gets, if the person that does it follows the, you know, there's no wind and they leave a certain buffer zone, like, if that happens, a lot of times that person is left with no recourse,
right?
There's no one that will...
You're responsible for your drift, but it's hard to prove
exactly
where your drift went. See?
However, at Saffordville... we got together as neighbors. We contacted all of our neighbors, and we all went with one type of, of chemical, and it worked real well.
Yes.
We could spray right up to the edge.
Yes, and it does work extremely well if they're all together. And so there's also this, in the discussion, there's this idea that with those competing companies, that there's kind of a requirement that it just makes it very obvious. It's very difficult to have competitors farming next to each other. And so it's like...
So in that case, Love Your Neighbor is getting together with everybody in Saffordville and saying, what are we going to do together so that none of us are harming each other?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it worked real well.
Yeah.
Other than... Well, the jury's still there. The jury's still out on the grapes, but Neighbor's got grapes and it didn't bother his.
Right.
It cupped him a little bit, but
right.
it didn't kill him.
Yeah,
he didn't
say
anything.
So, yeah, and even so, in one of the discussions that I heard, they were discussing that in some of the internal workings of one of the companies, they basically said, "We know this happens, but that will just require everyone to buy our product, right? Because they know that that's the kind of a safe way." So there's kind of this way in which it just makes it very difficult. To work all through the details of how can we love our neighbor and still do the, because it's awesome, you know, to have that crop that you can spray and it kills everything else, and it's tremendous for the crop, right? So that's kind of a local thing that I was trying to figure out. I was asking lots of questions, and they're like, "Well, no, that's not exactly."
Yeah, I think when we look in terms of just pollution, toxins. Acid, I mean, there's a lot smog.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, I think, overlap that I think Christians can really get behind because of this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there, I think there's a, I'll probably talk about this later, there's another step beyond this,
mm-hmm.
which seems to be like the firewall between Christian stewardship of the earth and the larger ecological anti-human
mm-hmm.
idolatry of the earth that's in a lot of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I think that, you know, is carbon dioxide a toxin?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that poison?
Like, yeah.
Like sulfur monoxide or
yeah.
other things that factories produce.
Yeah. I think that understanding and kind of understanding that line and why that line is there will be helpful, because it's going to be hard. I think, Becky, you talked about how, you know, phrase it correctly, but you kind of can tend to oppose a view because maybe someone on the opposite side has it just because they're in the opposite camp. So learning how to know what we support and why, what the differences are behind the motivation, it can be something that takes time to communicate and can lead to gospel conversations, because it's based in God's command for how we steward the earth. And so a lot of times when you have a view that is unexpected, people think, well, you're on the other side, or, you know, but you care for the earth, so does that mean this, right? So it's, I would encourage you guys to use those to talk about, well, yeah, because, right, and link it back to
yeah.
God's commanded us to be good stewards of the earth. And so they can see that, oh, there's a different way of viewing, a deeper level of difference in how we can view.
I would also just say that when we talk about loving your neighbor and how does that relate to the environment, it is far less clear than in a lot of other areas. You know, love your neighbor means you're faithful to your heavenly Father, sleep with somebody else's, whatever,
mm-hmm.
right? But in terms of the environment, it's very collective.
Mm-hmm.
There's generally not just one person messing it up for everybody. It's like
yeah.
a way of life that we all share
right.
that harms the children in Flint, Michigan. Or,
mm-hmm.
You know, this business that employs this whole town is harming this town downriver.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I think that we're quick to say, this is not my fault because I don't intend it.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to the environment, there has to be a humility to say, maybe I am the cause of someone else's harm without knowing it, and maybe the cost of changing it is high.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think obviously when you start thinking globally, then
mm-hmm.
that gets...
Yeah.
There is a humility believers should have in saying, we don't want to be doing harm to other people.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be loving them. And
mm-hmm.
does that require a changing of our lifestyle? Or does it require, let's invest in trying to help them in other ways, you know, to overcome that or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that I think is where we kind of have this gut level, I'm not personally harming someone, as
mm-hmm.
opposed to understanding this is the environment, this is the whole earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all share it, and there are ways that
mm-hmm.
my life affects someone else's, whether I know it or not.
Yeah. And I think it's difficult to... I think you have to have kind of an eternal perspective, where you were talking about, like, you may not be able to make it to the end goal in your lifetime for whatever it is you're pursuing. And we know that it's going to be improvement, we're not going to solve any problem, but we're going to make improvements, right? We're bringing it under our control. And so we want to pass it on better to our kids in the way that man is interacting with the world, even if the curse continues to bring in new things that are corrupting. You know, we want to make sure that as much as possible, we're not being a blight, but that we're being a blessing to the world, to subdue it, to bring it under God's rule, and in a way that blesses and loves our neighbors.
And sometimes it's super costly. Like, when they discovered that cholera was caused by drinking water. Okay, so if you're talking about the Thames River, okay, this is like everyone's source of water in London, right? And so what do you do when you find out that that's the cause? Because you're pumping the sewage in there, and people are downstream are drawing and drinking it. The cost of changing that was so high that they just kept kicking that can down the road,
mm-hmm.
and they kept having these cholera outbreaks in the poor areas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at some point you have to say, we're going to be the generation that shoulders this.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to create a new sewage system,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it is. And, you know, sometimes we have to think big and we have to think expensive in those ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That kind of comes back to make you think that, you know, the Tower of Babel and stuff, where God decentralized you know, people then, I think you look at big cities like London and that in the day, you know, I think people would have been spread out and they would have been a lot better off, a lot healthier.
Right.
So the centralization of societies today, you know, where everybody's driven to the cities, you know, go to Fort Worth or, you know, even Kansas City, you drive in there and it's just a brown haze over it, you know, and
yeah.
But drive 20 miles out of town, you don't see it, you mm-hmm. know. So it's
yeah.
So it's that centralization is, I think, a real problem where, you know, it's caused a lot of environmental issues
yeah.
versus, you know, some farmer spraying extended
right.
herbicide on the soybeans. That the yeah. EPA has made such a big mess out of it.
Yeah. yeah. Awesome. Well, next week we'll kind of summarize our general observations and we'll talk about, we hinted at one of them, right? Population control, and the old term was global warming. Now it's
climate change,
right? Just change the label.